In 2010, Taylor Swift released Speak Now, her third album, and among many bangers, there's a catchy little country song called Mean. Originally a kiss-off to a nasty review of a performance at the Grammys, it quickly became an anthem for bullying in general, especially of a certain kind of femininity, a certain kind of cringe. Taylor says that one day she'll be living in a big old city, and all you, the bully, are ever going to be is mean. And while that kind of awkward naivete is exactly what made Taylor charming, 20 years old, when this album was released, I can't help but associate it with a fictional character from a mediocre TV show. It's what we do here on Totally Trans. Kinda our whole thing.
I don't know what you've done to me, but I know it's my history. I wanna do bad things.
I grew up in a small town in Tennessee. Not quite as small as you're imagining, probably, but it felt like a coffin, I can promise you that. I've talked about this before, but my queerness was visible from an early age. And from the first time my cousin asked me, "What's wrong with you?" to the last time someone kicked me in the stomach and called me a faggot, I thought about it. I thought about the bruises I hid from my parents because of the uncomfortable questions they would raise, and the nights I asked God why he made me like this. And eventually, I stopped asking, because I never got any answers. By the time I reached 8th grade, I had a new start in a class where no one knew me. I reinvented my personality so I could survive, so I could hide, and I didn't let myself be seen for years after that. I was a good kid until then. I didn't cheat. I didn't hang out with a bad crowd. I didn't swear or drink or smoke weed or be mean to anyone. And the only thing I lied about was the one thing I could never speak. And then I started lying about everything. I invented this person, this boy, who didn't get beat up all the time, didn't get called gay or girl, and I imitated my father or the boys in my class, and the wild thing is that it worked. It worked so well, I forgot who I really was for a long time. And I dreamed of getting out of the South, out of a small town. I, like most of the small town theater kids I knew, wanted to move to New York, wanted to be big enough where they couldn't hit me. And I knew that I could be anyone I wanted just as soon as I got there. And the same year that I finally did, I moved to New York. A new show premiered on HBO. Okay, so True Blood is not a very good show. I think there's some fun stuff in the first couple of seasons, but it runs out of steam pretty quickly and just becomes a mess by the last few years. But it's also pretty damn queer. Intentionally so. Basically, the whole thing is a metaphor for gay people, and a weird, strained one at that. Vampires come out of the casket and try to integrate into society, and this show focuses on the loves and losses of one semi-psychic waitress with the unlikely name of Sookie Stackhouse. It's a sexy, fun time for a while, especially as it was most people's first introduction to Alexander Skarsgård, but the central metaphor was pretty fun at the time, I suppose, and while it couldn't be described as subtle, showrunner Alan Ball is fucking Tarkovsky compared to the Ryan Murphy fuckiverse we have now. So without getting into the weeds on this show that you probably shouldn't waste time watching, let's zero in on something specific. Jessica Hamby is, like me, a good kid. A Christian teenager who sneaks out one night and runs afoul of some shitty vampires. She's a sheltered homeschool girl who suffered physical and mental abuse from her father. Bill, one of the main characters and sometime love interest of our hero, Sookie, is being punished by the vampire magister of Louisiana. Bill is forced to kill and turn Jessica, making her his responsibility, his surrogate daughter. It's really upsetting, actually, especially done by someone who we are supposed to see as the good vampire. Much of her arc in the first couple of seasons is about her acclimating to being a vampire and the culture shocks she deals with along the way, both for good and ill. Bill is a terrible vampire parent. He's bad at almost everything, really, other than saying, "Shocky." And she is forced to learn how to be a vampire on her own. Sometimes finding help in the community, but mostly not. At first, she experiences a lot of euphoria as she realizes that her old life is gone, and she has the freedom to figure out who she really is. She also experiences a lot of envy at more mature, specifically women, vampires, and the ease they seem to have in their own skin. She's used a lot for comic relief at first, as she's young and impulsive and impossible to control, which reminds me a lot of some of the just-out tea girls, drunk on vodka cranberries and still high on the dress, going spinny. Quick disclaimer. Jessica may not seem like a good example at first, because she is made a vampire against her will. One of the many ways the metaphor doesn't really hold up. Much like the, very much discussed on our show, mutant metaphor. When there's a power imbalance, it's hard to take it too seriously. Queer people don't actually pose any harm to anyone, obviously. The people on the show are afraid of vampires because they kill people. It kind of makes sense. The show has a whole way of trying to deal with this, of course. Scientists have synthesized blood, and it's sold in every convenience store and bar. It's where the show gets its name, True Blood. But it doesn't quite work, because it tastes like shit, and almost every vampire we meet on the show kills, like, a lot of people. But let's just ignore that for the sake of this episode. Cool? Cool. In Season 2, Episode 2, Keep This Party Going, Jessica runs away back to her family's house, at first to see them, but when she gets there, she tries to kill her abusive father, and Bill has to arrive to fix things by glamoring them into forgetting about it. It's after this loss of her family that she meets Hoyt, a dumbass country boy who's nice to her and treats her like any other girl. Sound familiar, 21?
You're a vampire? Wow. That is awesome.
And the first time they're making out, she gets embarrassed because she can't help her fangs from coming out. That's all. No comment. Moving on. In episode 9 of season 2, I Will Rise Up, Jessica meets her boyfriend's mom, Maxine Foytonberry. Maxine is used to represent all the good Christian women who are, at their core, filled with hatred and fear. Jessica tried her best to relate to Maxine, specifically as a woman, but Maxine is having none of it. She's stonewalling them, telling Jessica that Hoyt is a good boy, and any intimacy between the two of them makes her uncomfortable, even nauseous. When Jessica tells her that she doesn't have a family, Maxine tells her that she's sorry, but the fact remains that her son is too important to her to lose him to the sin of vampirism. If you think I'm going to let him wander around for the rest of his life, all hours of the night, with an orphan vampire, you got another thing coming. And Jessica pops the fangs. She argues that she can give him everything a human could. Not hardly, says Maxine. You can't give him a child. Which sends Jessica away in tears. Maxine, of course, is focused on herself. Her own loss and how Hoyt is ungrateful of everything she sacrificed for him. In season 4, Jessica's been living with Hoyt for over a year, and the cracks are starting to show. She's been mainstreaming, as they call it on the show, the practice of integrating into human society. Hoyt, like many men, resents that Jessica is more powerful than he is, and chafes when she steps outside of the traditional role of a housewife. She isn't exactly hiding her vampirism, queerness, but when he hurts himself and she offers to heal it with her blood, he recoils. He no longer finds her difference interesting or sexy. He wants to force her into the box of what he considers normal. She leaves him and goes to Fangtasia, the vampire bar that's a major setting of the show, and catches some strange, feeding on a goth boy. After some more drama, which we can skip, she and Hoyt break up. He becomes an anti-vampire bigot who wears an Obama mask, and she moves back in with Bill, her surrogate father. And in her box of things is Taylor Swift's album, Speak Now. The song they play when she falls into bed, well, falls into truck, I guess, with Jason, another hotter country idiot that's nice to her, isn't mean, but haunted. Which is maybe the only Taylor Swift song in 2010 that you can fuck to? I don't know. I'm not going to go on for the next 3 seasons of the show. It really gets worse as it goes on, I promise. But watching this nonsense last year, I really connected with Jessica. I think I've mentioned on here before that I started and stopped transition a couple of times before I did it for good, but when I was 22 years old, I was on hormones for the first time in my life, living alone in big old New York City, doing a lot of things I shouldn't have, but I don't know if I regret them. All the cringe, all the mistakes, all the most embarrassing things we do as young queers are kind of unavoidable. So what's the point in having all that shame? Thinking about the kids who beat the shit out of me when I was 12 years old because I walked like a girl, mirrored that with the first time I walked down 2nd Avenue at 2 in the morning, carrying the most uncomfortable 2 high heels in my hand because I'd seen it on Sex and the City.
taking pills out of someone's hand and not really remembering what I did in the bathroom at the bar later. These are more than just a queer experience, of course, but the shame and the freedom and the pain, I think, are pretty explicitly tied to that. Who doesn't think about the slurs they were called and then thinking later, well, they were right? Jessica becomes proud to be a vampire, and although she's written pretty unevenly, I think the character's arc is pretty positive in the long run. She escapes abuse, and more importantly, a future that many people, especially in the South, are chained to, by poverty and by their parents, by religion, and by bigotry and fear. She runs to Fangtasia. She gets her hands, and fangs, dirty. She makes mistakes, trades out her circle of friends for better ones. She rejects and embraces her identity. She falls in love. She gets her heart broken. She falls in love again. She hates her parents. She finds a new family. She's cringe. She gets through it. She hates herself. She likes herself. She loves herself. She grew up. And so did I. And so did you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Totally Trans, a Splendor Queer production. We have a Patreon that can be found at patreon.com/totallytrans, and we are currently discussing updating our levels and would like your feedback. So please reach out to us on social media or in the Discord and let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at Katie of the Lake, and you can please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts because we live in a cyberpunk nightmare oligopoly. And tune in next week where I'll be joined by Ada and Jack, and I have definitely forced them to watch at least one, maybe two episodes of True Blood. So that should be a good conversation. See you later. Bye. Someday I'll be living in a big old city, and all you're ever gonna be is me. Gotta be so mean. Like most of the other small town theater kids I knew, wanted to move to New York. Oh, are you serious? I pointed out my flaws again as if I don't already see them. I walk with my head down, trying to block you out, 'cause I'll never impress you. I-